Hello, hello, and welcome to Reality TV, and happy 200th episode. To me, to you, to where it all began a little over 3 years ago. When I started this podcast, it was just a little whim thing that I decided to do because there were no other podcasts talking about 90 Day Fiancé. None at all, zero. And many of you who are listening right now were there from the beginning. I think we were in some sort of offshoot TLC Facebook group, and we were all searching for any podcast at all that was talking about 90 Day because it was so batshit crazy. We couldn't believe that we were the only ones watching this, which obviously we were not. I mean, look at, we're 3+ years later and it's huge. So I was like, you know what? What the hell? I'll start a podcast. I have no idea what I'm doing. I bought a really cheap microphone from Best Buy. And now here we are with 24 other 90 Day Fiancé podcasts, way bigger than mine, but who's noticing? But we'll talk about some 90 Day Fiancé a little bit later. But first, I need to gush about the Emmys for just a moment. Schitt's Creek. If you are not watching Schitt's Creek, I guess it's not really on anymore. The series finale is long since gone and over. But if you haven't watched it, if you haven't gotten into it, it is on Netflix. It's on Hulu. Get yourself over there and watch it. I will say, push through the first season. I watched the first season, first couple episodes, and I was like, I don't get it. This is not for me at all. And then I went back and I started binging it and I couldn't stop. And it's so, so good. So stick through the first season, first few episodes. I promise you'll buy into it and you're going to love it, obviously, as much as the Academy did, because Schitt's Creek swept the whole goddamn comedy category. And I was screaming. I was choking back tears. I was gushing like I myself won something, like we all won something. And I think it's because it's been such a shit year and it's so abnormal for something to actually go right, to feel good about something, to feel joy for something. It was just an hour of bliss upon elation on top of anxiety and pride and also, you know, wanting to cut out all that hokey award show banter. But it was a bright spot in a dark year and, of course, an even darker weekend with the news that the beloved RBG died. Thank God my mom was here when we heard the news. We were watching it all over CNN and MSNBC. I actually had her over here to enjoy. You're going to run to the store when you hear this one. Hopefully the sale's still on. Barefoot, the wine brand. Now they have some crazy super sweet spritzers. I don't get into that shit, but all of their red and white wines were on sale for 99 cents a bottle. Yeah, you heard me right. You had to buy 6 bottles, which, I mean, you would have to pay me to not buy 6 bottles at that price. So she was over here and I was getting her white wine wasted and we were watching McMillions because she's never seen it. And then we promptly finished 1/3 of my wine reserves in the refrigerator in the garage. But guess what? It's not all bad news because there's going to be a little pitter-patter of feet next spring in none other than Tony and McKelty's home. Yeah, from Sister Wives, Taco Tony. McKelty is expecting, or should I say, I'm going to read this Instagram post from McKelty herself because she said the one thing that I hate when a woman is pregnant, I hate when she says this, we are pregnant. No, you are pregnant. You are both expecting a baby. You are having a baby join your family, but no, Tony is not pregnant with you. Now, before I read this, I want you to picture this in your mind, McKelty looking surprised as I was when our Facebook post, our poll about which NSYNC member is the hottest, and all of you guys said Lance, and I assumed the world knew that he was the least attractive. That's how shocked McKelty looks in this picture, you know, because she draws on her eyebrows crooked and at all different sort of geometrical angles. They are also holding a pair of men's size 13 dress shoes for no apparent reason. Tony looks like a busted Rosie O'Donnell, and inexplicably he's grimacing at the camera. It's a lot to take on, but here is the caption to the photo. "Tony and I are pregnant," all in capital letters. "We've been planning this since we were married almost 4 years ago. So happy that it's finally happened. We are expecting the baby in March 2021. Happy beyond belief, and I can't wait to share another amazing experience with my @TonyChestnut husband." I mean, a lot to unpack there, but even more to unpack are my predictions. I'm going officially on the record right now. Remind me to go back to episode 200 when we see the birth, because yes, McKelty confirmed that TLC will be filming the home birth, in which, prediction number one, Tony will be in the tub. He will be wearing long swim trunks that, like, he needed them for the waist size, but they're way too long. They're going to be a very odd length, like mid-calf swim trunk. He will not go shirtless. He's going to wear a black or dark red t-shirt in the tub because, you know, he's modest. He will also be, oh, a top knot. I can see like a very high bun, probably because he'll have enough pressure from Christine to pull his hair up because it's not hygienic. Otherwise, he would have his nasty, long, stringy hair all over her sweaty body and shoulders. I think he's going to be running late during contractions because he's going to be eating snacks in the kitchen. Can't you see him being like, "Anyone want a bagel and cream cheese? These are my favorite." He's going to be all about the snacks that people are bringing over for the midwife, the doula, but he's going to be thinking they are bringing a buffet for him, you know, rations for him because he's going to be tired. Now, Tony and McKelty have mentioned that they're really hoping for a girl, and I think that's, you know, cute and all. But I think there is a reason Tony wants a girl, and that's because Tony wants to be the only boy in the family. He doesn't want a little Tony coming in to steal his thunder. No, 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 no. He needs to be da Bella da Ball. Now, for the baby shower, I have a lot of ideas. I really think they're going to run with that taco-themed wedding. Of course, you all know the 4000 Street Taco wedding. But instead of tacos, because it's a baby shower, I think they're going to go to keto theme or some sort of like mini taco bar. Like, oh gosh, actually, those are really good. I actually love taquitos and I love those little frozen mini taco things. They're complete shit. They're not authentic by any means. They're not Tony's tacos, but they're pretty damn good. But I can see them going with that because they're going to think it's really funny. They're also going to think it's funny to have a baby piñata that they beat, just like they beat each other's piñatas during their wedding. Like, they have a very bizarre sense of humor, which leads me to my next prediction, the baby's name. If it is a boy, I know they're big Star Wars fans because we've seen their house in the background of other Instagram photos, and they have lightsabers put up on the walls as decorations. So I think for a boy, it's going to be Jedi. And for a girl, going with the Star Wars theme, I think it's going to be Rey, because I think that's the name of one of the Star Wars chicks. Or Leia, but that might be a little too on the nose. Although Jedi wouldn't be, I don't know. But those are my predictions so far. Give me a week or two just to digest. Like I said, it's been a really tough week here for all of us. But once I sleep on this a couple nights, I'll put my other predictions in the book. Now, before checking in on Married at First Sight, some clarification on Patreon. Please go and look at those tiers if you think you'll ever be interested, because prices are going to go up in October, and you can lock in the current tier price for Kingdom Come Forever and Ever if you sign up now. As for what you get at each tier, it's all listed there, but I'll try to break it down here very quickly in a nutshell. At the sticker/$5 and up level, you'll get the entire backlog of bonus episodes from me and Amanda. You can see the categories, the title of the episodes before you sign up, so you can get a good idea of what's over there. We're talking, oh gosh, I mean, there's probably 200 plus episodes between Amanda and I. Also, at the sticker $5 level, you get weekly bonus episodes from me and or Amanda separately. Then every 3 weeks, we do a crossover. Right now, we are doing Teen Mom 2 and Marriage Boot Camp crossover episodes. And at the mug and up level, I know, very creative titling here, but again, go over to the tiers and you can look at them. At the mug and up level, you're getting all of the above and an additional 2 to 3 bonus episodes per month. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the new season of Pen 15. We'll probably talk a little bit about the Emmys because we're both freaking out about the Schitt's Creek thing. We're going to be watching the Paris Hilton documentary. Some really good stuff coming up. Again, minimum of 2 to 3 bonus episodes on top of everything else at the mug and up level. If you're confused or you're not sure, just take a peek at the tiers. The link is in the show notes, so you can just click it and it'll take you right there. Or all of that is at patreon.com/lovetohateTV. So this week at the sticker $5 and up level, we are going to be doing a crossover for Teen Mom 2. And then next week or the week after, we'll be catching up on Marriage Boot Camp with Amber and Matt and Tanya. And maybe, just maybe, we'll get down to solving the mystery of...
Let's jump about the hip on there.
All right, let's jump into Married at First Sight. This episode was titled Deal Breakers, and we're told by Dr. Cal, who we don't see for the rest of the episode, thank God, it's all about testing boundaries in the real world. You know, being married isn't all ceremonies and celebrations. It's also testing and finding one another's boundaries and how you work together day to day. Crazy concept. Thanks, Dr. Cal. All right, let's start with Brett and Olivia. I was shocked because I thought Olivia was, you know, someone I could hang out with, someone I could see having perhaps some similarities, but she did me dirty here. Turns out Olivia and Brett don't use a mattress cover on their mattress. You know, you think you know someone and then you see them make a bed with a naked mattress underneath a fitted sheet. At least she used a top sheet, a flat sheet. And yes, I am pro flat sheet only because I grew up never using a flat sheet. I don't even think I knew that they existed until middle school when I went to a sleepover and I saw my friend's day bed made up with a flat sheet and a quilt. And I was like, whoa, am I on a TV set here? Is this Leave It to Beaver? So in that moment, I remember it clear as day because then we painted our nails with Wet n Wild nail polish. I knew that when I grew up, I wanted to be a flat sheet person. And nevertheless, I persisted, and we are pro flat sheet in our family. But moving along, Brett takes Olivia to one of his favorite places because they're trying to find things that they have in common because they don't have a single thing in common. And he brings her to this place, Slidell Rocks Indoor Rock Climbing. And Olivia seems to enjoy it. Seems like she just wants to go out and do anything with Brett other than, you know, offer topics of conversation, which then he shoots down and comes back with some stupid sarcastic response. So she's thrilled to just get out of the house. It's unfortunate, however, because using the skills that I've developed in order to be what I consider a self-taught FBI level investigator, I found that Slidell Rocks has closed its doors for business and it will not be reopening. However, the business is for sale and so is the building. So maybe Brett can use all those tools that he has in his kitchen tool shed ensuite to good use and buy the business. He loves to have a mortgage, so maybe he can get over there and turn it into something Brett enjoys. Or maybe he keeps it a rock climbing place and he just hoists women that he wants to date up on that thing so that they don't have to stare up his nostrils, stare down at him. God, I'm such a bitch. Okay, now let's jump to Olivia's night. She gets to pick something that they are going to do, and she picks trivia. I think I would love this kind of shit. If I may be so bold, perhaps a little cocky, I think I would be amazing at this. The amount of useless information this noodle of mine contains, it's got to be good for something, right? Some cocktails, some fun friends. Obviously, Brett doesn't see the fun in it, probably because he's not very clever or quick. He thinks he's witty, you know, he's on the ball, but he is not at all. He thinks what he's saying is snarky, but they're just bad jokes. But no one in his life has told them because they also have bad jokes. Yeah, I'm looking at the Brett brothers. That's the kind of people that he hangs out with. They're all unfunny people who think they're hilarious. So when Brett is around anyone except the Brett brothers, he's out of his element. You know, he's not the cool brother or the funniest youngest guy there. So he's just going to throw a little temper tantrum and make it seem like it's everyone else and it's the situation that sucks and not him. Ugh. All right, Brett, it's time for him to grow up and move on. And I can't wait for Olivia just to call him on his shit because you know it's going to happen. One day she's just going to freaking snap and he's not going to see it coming. Shifting gears completely, Amelia and Bennett. We learn about this cute little story, a nursery rhyme, really, that Bennett's mom used to tell him. And it was all about falling in love with a butt. And since Amelia has one, I guess you could call this a fairy tale. Don't ask me what I just said because I don't understand it. I watched it 3 times and I still have no idea whether this butt story was a made-up thing or not. Let's move forward and talk about something that we can all relate to, and that is chores. You know, how do you divvy up who does what in the household? And for Amelia and Bennett, since everything has to be different and quirky, they decide that they're going to do a chore draft system where they choose one real chore and one speculative chore. I had no idea what a speculative chore was, but turns out they both did. Of course they did. No questions asked. For those of us who don't slackline, speculative chores are, for example, answer the door in the middle of the night, or you're going to be the one to dance for the neighbors, or answer difficult phone calls. Sure. Now, the thing is, and I know this is going to be another shocking fact to learn, Amelia is a little messy. Bennett likes to keep things tidy and doesn't mind, you know, sweeping up a mess if he sees it or taking out the trash when it's full. But Amelia's the type of person that doesn't see anything as a mess until it's messy. Right. Okay, so now Bennett's mentioned the state of the bathroom at least twice that I remember. So I think moving forward, that's going to be the thorn in Bennett's side for the entirety of their marriage. You know, I think he sees that Amelia is kind of just a messy person and he can deal with it everywhere else except the bathroom. And everyone has their thing or their space of their partners that will forever drive them nuts. You know, maybe it's not the messy kitchen. Maybe it's where they put their keys when they come home. And it might not be a daily thing that drives you nuts, but it's going to be that one thing that's going to make you snap. You know, that one day when you have had enough and you just go after them. For years and years, I'll give you mine. Mine was Dave leaving his belt on his pants and golf tees and change in his pants pockets. Okay, so the belt thing for me is because when you go to do laundry, to take a belt off a pair of pants is a pain in the ass. Like, it becomes a dangerous weapon when you try to pull it out because you're pulling it out through the pant loops. And then once you get it to the end, it just like whips out behind you. I would have marks on my laundry room wall because I would whip this thing out. And then when I get really pissed off, I would do it extra loudly. And then I'd hear him like scampering from the other room to come and get it and be like, I got it. I got it. And I'd be like, no, I already got it. You see what I'm saying here? Now, if yours is change in the pockets, however, I'm going to give you some advice of a former coworker of mine. She actually passed away, but I remember what she said because I would complain to her all the time how I would do laundry and these golf tees would get caught in the little lint thing or there'd be spare change, you know, tossing around in the dryer and it would drive me nuts. And she told me that she would take the change out of her husband's pants and she would just save it. And then that would become her Starbucks fund or the money that she'd save up so that she could go out for lunch during the work week or whatever. So a little pro tip there for you. And if you are lucky enough, sometimes your partner grows out of that or they learn that you're correct, that you're always right. Like in my case, Dave doesn't do the tees and the change in his pockets and he doesn't do the belt anymore. It's been replaced by leaving empty Pepsi bottles everywhere. But, you know, in 3 months when I snap on that, he's going to learn that I'm pretty perfect and that he's the one who needs to change. You know what I mean? Okay, but tying this back to Amelia and Bennett, the point I'm trying to make is I think Bennett is realistic enough and also in love with Amelia enough at this point that he'll overlook most of those things, although there will be one area in the household that will make him snap. I don't think that's the same case for Amelia, though. I think she's a different kind of personality. You know, like she's so carefree that she's going to have it easier in a way because she's not bothered by anything. You know, she'll be coming home from the hospital after a long shift, and she's not going to be bothered if Bennett hasn't cleaned out the organic compost in order to harvest their experimental beet or kale variety. You know what I mean? Or maybe it's not beets. It could be weed or some sort of hallucinogenic because Bennett sporting those ponytails later when he was talking about, I think it was bocce ball, that bocce ball date, he looked high as hell and it was kind of hilarious. But that is nothing, nothing at all compared to what happened next. Bennett has planned a romantic evening for his wife and he's whipping up just an easy homemade tofu with peanut sauce dish, which is actually precisely what I think Bennett smells like at all time. Tofu, peanut butter with a base note of patchouli. And as he's doing that, we hear a knock at the door. A surprise has arrived for his bride, Amelia. The door opens a little wider and there are two women draped in various fabrics. You know, you'd think Amelia knew these people because instantly she just embraces them, hugs them the way I hug my children when they're trying to pull away from me. Like, Mom, stop hugging me. But no, these are strangers to Amelia. They're Bennett's friends, and they've arrived to sing some songs for Amelia. Now, before I recite the lyrics to you, I should point out that one of the women has fashioned horns out of scraps of fabric. So she's like a ram meets Stitch from Lilo and Stitch. And the other woman is dressed like, not Maid Marian, oh, what's the name? Like a Renaissance woman with a vaginal-esque facial opening. I mean, as you can imagine, Amelia is enchanted and delighted. So as the tofu simmers and soaks or sautés or however Bennett chooses to prepare his dish, these are the words that dance around the apartment. When I was young, they told me, my body was just a holding cell, and in 100 years, I would be liberated from this earthly shell. Darling, you're the sweetest thing I've known in years, and I've known quite a lot. I am like Amelia. I'm speechless. I did not know what was going on as I was watching this. My mouth was ajar like Amelia's is all the time, but for two completely different reasons. She thinks that they have beautiful voices, which they did. It sounded beautiful, but I was so distracted and concerned for their mental health. I mean, how do we overlook? I'm sorry, I had to take my glasses off. Things are getting serious here. How do you overlook the fact that you have two grown women, one of them whose face looks like she's coming out of her mother's womb, her birth moment. The other one, like a ram robot. I was going to say Shrek, but I meant Stitch. It's truly baffling to me what kind of message that they're trying to send. You know, if this is their art, shouldn't I be able to appreciate the sounds you're making as well as what you are looking like, because right now I'm just very distracted. Amelia and Bennett get it though, so maybe I should shoot them an email or find some information. If anyone knows the name of this female group, is it like the Ram Vagers? Oh, that sounded bad. Okay, well, whatever. Someone find some information on these women. I would love to know, because Amelia and Bennett just thought it was like, oh, okay, cool. Just like they heard a Sia song on the radio. They just turn, go outside, just like it's any normal Tofu Tuesday after two women sang a single song and then left. And then they start talking about, I don't know, whatever. Where the hell am I now? I'm getting so distracted. Maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the point of the music, to take us outside of reality and just let your mind wander. Let it just go to the places where you wear horns, or go to the places where you stand in a velvet pillowcase in the middle of a stranger's room and then just walk out. I really have no idea what I was just going to say. I'll just jump to the next scene where Bennett is asking Amelia what it is about him that drives her nuts. I really just feel like I just did drugs or something. Even thinking about that just put me on a totally different planet. All right. So Bennett and Amelia are on this really weird swing that looked like it was in the middle of a parking lot or under an industrial bridge of some sort. And Bennett's trying to point out the fact that, yes, they're new in their relationship and it's totally normal to think the other person is perfect, that they have no flaws and things are always going to be super easy. But Bennett wants to get real, specifically about pet peeves, because everything has been ginger honey when you're sick and kombucha is fun to make together. But so far, that's not true reality. You know, like that's not long-term reality. There are going to be everyday things. So while they're sitting on this swing in the middle of nowhere, Bennett asks Amelia to list off any pet peeves that she has about him. She says that she doesn't have any, that he should go first. So he very quickly mentions that he doesn't like the way she washes glasses, that she washes the inside of the glasses, not the outside. And I actually gagged because he used the words like grimy or smudgy or something. And I just pictured Cheeto covered outside of the glass. And she was like, okay, well, I guess I'll have to wash the outside of the glass now too. As if it were a new concept, which, ugh, gross. But Amelia still goes back to, I don't think you have any flaws. I like to clear my throat like this. No, that's totally cool. I actually like that. Sounds like white noise. Then Bennett mentions that he forgets to wear deodorant. And she's like, oh my God, me too. And then he's like, I run late quite a bit. And she's like, oh, that's nothing. Not as much as I run late. So I think Bennett was kind of just like listing some other pet peeves that he has about Amelia as like a hint, hint, but she didn't catch his drift, or she didn't catch her own BO. But I think at the end of the day, Bennett had a really good point. That if you idealize someone and you think that they're always perfect, you are obviously glazing over the reality of a long-term relationship. You know, you can't really get deep with someone if they're thinking everything's perfect and they don't want to ever confront something that's bothering them, because it might start as something little, the golf tees and the change and the belts, and then it just builds into something bigger. And Bennett said that he used to do that. He would just put this person on a pedestal and not see anything wrong with it. But what you're doing is you're really pretending that person is someone that they're not. They're still a person and they have flaws. Now I'm going to jump to the other end of the spectrum here and, you know, say Amelia is allowed to feel the high of falling in love. And it's not really fair for Bennett to be projecting his own shit onto her. Like maybe she really is not bothered by it and she is carefree as fuck. So just let her be who she is, and you might have some issues with her. Bring it up to her. She seems pretty laid back about it. And if she has an issue with you, hopefully she feels comfortable enough to bring it up. But I think she's going to be pretty busy at the hospital and he's going to be taking care of all those annoying things that really only annoy him. Okay, speaking of things that annoy, shall we talk about Christina and Henry? Because Christina's still bugging the shit out of me. I'll talk about why I feel like an asshole about that in just a minute. But first, let's get to the real juicy drama. You guys, they're folding towels together and Henry doesn't do it correctly again. Okay, first of all, how boring can it get that now we're watching these two fold towels? They end up hanging on a hook in the end, so who the hell cares? Now, well, you know what? I think I'm going to talk about that crawfish group date here before we get into any of the other drama. The crawfish was the most interesting part of that meetup because I've never had crawfish. I don't even know what it looks like. I don't know what it tastes like. But I think I like the idea of it. Everyone's sitting around, maybe you have like a beer. The messy part of it, I'm hoping they give you like towels or towelettes or something, but it looks like it would be kind of fun. Like I like a piece of corn. I don't like working for my food. So if it's a lot of work to get the fish out, is it something like someone can do it for you? Can you crack it and squeeze it for me and then I eat it? Like, is it like shrimp? Tag me in the Facebook group. Let me know what the hell crawfish is all about. Let's talk about the conversation. Obviously, the food was way more interesting. The conversation overall was pretty boring, but I did want to point out how Christina smiled when Henry jokingly said that thing like, oh yeah, the way Christina did it was sexy. The girl smiled so big, looking directly into that camera like, did you hear that? He said, I'm sexy. But not like in a shy way, like, oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. It was like, did you guys catch that? Did you get that on film? It's about time, right? Ugh. Why do I dislike Christina so much? I feel like I'm the only one that's not liking her. I feel like you guys should be reassuring me and my feelings right now. There's just something off with the girl, and I can't put my finger on what exactly it is, but I just don't get a feeling like she's a genuinely nice person. And how Amani got that sense from her, I have no idea, because when she's talking to Henry, the first thing she said was, oh my God, how amazing is Christina? Isn't she just like the sweetest? So she was completely shocked to hear how Christina is rude to production. If that fourth wall was broken down by Henry, I don't see why Amani didn't keep going with that later. Like, why didn't she press him for details in that situation? Or why didn't she say that to Christina when they were up on the roof later? I mean, it kind of seems like if Henry said that, we already know it's about production. It's fine if everyone else talks about it too, or it's fine if they share details with us at this point, meaning production. Like if Amani did ask him questions or did say it to Christina, they can be filming that and showing us too. It seems like everyone's walking on eggshells around Christina for no reason at all. Why are we protecting her so much? Am I seeing something that you guys are not? I mean, I do understand from Christina's perspective how it would be frustrating to have Henry telling you one thing and, you know, she's thinking that they're all good within one another. And then she has Amani coming over to say, oh, he actually thinks your personality is a deal breaker. However, Christina is not the type of person who would be easy to open up to. Think about this. If this were you, do you feel like even on a friend level, you could just sit down and shoot the shit with Christina and she wouldn't judge you or have some sort of nasty response? I think Henry is saying what he needs to say to stay alive. I mean, even when Christina's explaining how she felt later to Henry, she was like yelling, you can relax around me. You can be yourself around me, Henry. You know that. It's me. Ooh, okay. Wow. Obviously, it is a tough spot to be in when you don't see yourself with someone like Henry obviously doesn't. And I don't think Henry thinks Christina's a terrible person either. He doesn't think she's heinous or a complete monster. He just isn't into her. And you know when you are not feeling it with someone. He can't change that at this point, though. He's married to her. He's signed up for a show to be on week to week. So how's he supposed to change that? It just sucks for both of them. All right, now Karen and Miles. Karen. I don't think she needed to go and spend the night at her own place saying that she didn't feel safe around Miles because he wasn't going to assault her or attack her. I think she was uncomfortable. I think she was more embarrassed about the conversation. And I don't want to rehash all my thoughts on this because I went into it last week. But I will give both of them compliments here. They're growing in the relationship. I feel like Dr. Pepper here. I'm proud of them. But Karen did a great job. She remained calm. She was just super specific about what it was that made her upset. She didn't trudge up a bunch of stuff from the past. You know, when he touched me here or he said that. Oh, that sounds really bad. But you guys know what I'm saying. She just handled it very maturely. And so did Miles. He was like, listen, I heard everything you said. I'm sorry. I wish I could take it back and I'm going to do better. It's almost as if you don't even need the experts there after the matchmaking special. So, oh, you know what? Now let's talk about this bocce ball bet that Bennett and Amelia had with Karen and Miles on their meetup. The other groups got the crawfish. They got the bocce ball. I actually would prefer the bocce ball only because I wouldn't have had to hang out with Brett and Christina. But I really liked how Bennett and Amelia, they were the wingmen, you know? They facilitated Miles and Karen warming up to each other. You know, they even snapped their way to first base with them. I have a good feeling about these two. I think Miles is just the right level of flirting right now, just the right level of teasing. They're finding their groove. And, oh gosh, I almost forgot about this yoga massage thing. The fact that Imani even considered getting close to Miles' feet during that massage is huge. I've been married, what did I just say, 15? Yeah, 15 years. I wouldn't go near Dave's feet without a towel or some sort of barrier. That's disgusting. So the fact that she didn't instantly wince and scoot away, I should give her little Bennett and Amelia snaps there. Feet are just gross. They're a mode of transportation. They're like any tire on cars or buses, a bike. Do we massage those? No. It should be the same thing for feet. Feet are for moving places only. That's it. Don't touch them. Blech. Oh, all right. Let's talk about Woody and Imani. Sorry, I just like thought about soaking feet in a pedicure place and I just got so grossed out. The amount of germs just floating in that water. And they don't clean those tubs, you guys. I have contracted foot virus fungus things from every single pedicure place except one in my life, which is why I think I've only had three total. Woody and Imani, where were we? Jesus. I'm going to be having PTSD for probably the next 2 weeks now thinking about that. Brushing teeth. Yes, we're back to brushing teeth and brushing hair. They love those teeth brushing scenes. They've got to go because we don't need to see people scraping tartar off of their teeth. But it gets Woody going. Jesus, he has got a huge sex drive. Imani is trying to play all coy with it too. Like, what do you mean I'm showing too much skin? But you know, she loves it. She would brush her teeth butt naked and be like, I don't know why he's saying that I look sexy. And she should feel that way. I think it's great that she feels wanted, she feels needed, and it's working for him. So whether she's brushing her hair, brushing her teeth, I love it. It's working for him. But what is not going to work for Imani is whooping their future children. Now, obviously, this is not a parenting podcast. However, I am a parent and a former teacher, and every job I've had in my life up until this point has always been with kids. I've dealt with a lot of crazy shit, and never once have I needed or wanted to whoop or lay hands on any kid to teach them a lesson or to discipline them. Now, I'm not here to tell you whether you can or can't spank your kid. But I myself am anti-spanking. I don't think using your hands in any way except to hug and wipe away tears from your kids are needed. I don't want my kids thinking that it's okay to express anger or frustration or to show dominance by hitting or slapping or spanking or grabbing, shaking around, whooping. And I think it'd just be scary to know that the same parent who can love you and kiss you goodnight can then flip the switch and be capable of hurting you. But that's just my opinion. That's how I feel. I'm not going to be going on a nationwide speaking tour about it. I'm just going to say I agree with Imani on this one. And much like Miles and Karen, I thought it was really mature for Woody to admit, like, oh, you know what? You had a really good point there. I never thought about it that way. And we can agree and move forward from here. Don't you wish we could do the same thing politically or even just as neighbors in the world? Oh my God, which reminds me. I'll have to update you guys on the Patreon episode. I had something going on with my neighbor during a recording last week. I'll update you guys over there. All right, let's get into 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After, the point of no return. Dun, dun, dun. Hopefully that applies to Karini and Paul, meaning they will not be back on the show because I've said this before. I think Paul being on this show is the worst thing that's ever happened for Karini because it just enables Paul to not get a fucking job. Speaking of enablers, Colt and Debbie. We find Colt sitting ever so close to his mommy, cutting his kitty's nails. Totally normal, right? Totally normal for a 30-something-year-old man to be doing on any given evening, you know, cuddling and grooming his cats while his mom waits for their dinner delivery for their date night in. Things are getting spicy tonight, you guys. We hear a knock at the door and Colt jumps up. I hope you saw this. And he does this little, oh, I'm just going to run real quick and go get that door. A little tiptoe sneak right past you there. You know, like a dainty eater does. We see you, girl. We got you, Colt. You're going to dive right into that vegan mac and cheese my ass. Just like Chris Farley in the Gap Girl skit. Like we all do when we get a food delivery. I'm not the only one doing the lay off me, I'm starving. Anytime anything in like cardboard or styrofoam comes in front of my face. Now we enter the time in the season. It always happens the last episode of the season or the second to last where Colt has an epiphany or pretends to have an epiphany. And it's all Debbie's fault that he's not a normal grown man or has normal relationships. It's all Debbie's fault. She's smothering him and he's never realized it until this point. As if Debbie is forcing him not to make his bed or demanding that he not make his own food or do his own laundry, requiring that he reach across the table and ask to hold her hand as he's staring into her eyes. I mean, Debbie is a complete nightmare. She's codependent, but Colt is absolutely to blame here, too. The fact that he doesn't make his own bed, who even wants their parent when they're an adult to be making their bed, especially with all the disgusting stuff Colt is doing there? Ugh. Some nerve. Respect his boundaries. What an asshole. I kind of enjoy the fact that he's got to deal with Debbie Downer now. Picking fights, lovers' quarrels with him every evening over dinner. God. Okay, switching gears. Angela and Michael. I'm not going to say anything except my condolences. I feel bad for her. She's an abusive person, but I'm glad she made it back in time to spend the last few days with her mom because everyone deserves that. At the very least, everyone should be able to be with the people who they love and to be surrounded by love during those last few days. Now, Swelu and Kalani. Oof, what a turn of events. So Kalani and the boys go to drive the family off Swelu to the airport. And when they get to the hotel, we learn a couple things. First of all, Tammy's left. Sayonara. See ya. Who cares? And second of all, we learn that Asuelu's mom is none other than Wanda Sykes, you guys. Wanda Sykes. I mean, I don't know if it was the lighting or camera angles, but I can't believe we didn't see this first. I mean, the woman is hilarious. Cracking jokes about needing money again. Ooh, what a cut up. Class act. Grade A stand up. I mean, I was in stitches. What a talent. Hope she's able to keep that touring schedule consistent with COVID because it's been tough out there for traveling stand up comics, you know? Clearly, I'm joking. Asuelu's mom has zero timing whatsoever. Too soon. Way too soon. Now let's fast forward to the cocktail place, where a very red-faced and very eager waiter is serving mommy and daddy on their date night. No, no, no. I'm not talking about Colt and Debbie. I'm talking about Asuelo and Kalani, of course. Just wanted to make that clear. Now, Kalani orders what looks like nachos with chili on top. I am all about nachos. I actually was about to order that last night from a Mexican restaurant around here. But, you know, with traveling time in the styrofoam container, it can get a little muggy in there, and I don't like soggy chips. But Kalani's with chili on top, I don't approve of that. You know, there's a very specific ratio of beef and bean to chip. And when you step a toe into that chili territory, you got to go like a Frito. So I did not enjoy the mix. The portions, I mean, bravo. Compliments to the chef. Nachos should only be served in portions that either, I'm going to give you an either or here. This is an official nacho rule, at least in my household. The nachos have to be on a plate, the width or length that could hold a newborn baby, or it could be on a smaller plate, but the height of it has to be the height of a newborn baby in the fetal position, not standing. I mean, we're not going to go like 19 to 21 inches here, but, you know, in a fetal position. So that's like, what, 10 inches or so? Fair enough. Okay, so moving forward, Kalani seizes the opportunity I've always dreamed of, and that is to get your husband to make a promise on camera. Am I right? Making a promise on camera? That's like a wish come true. That would be one of my three wishes if I were to get a genie, along with, obviously, the first wish is going to be for unending wishes. Second would be get my house wired on camera. And third, it would be a lot of replacing my metabolism system and those of everyone I love too, including you guys. So you can't tell me that I'm superficial or anything or talking shitty about my body, because I'm offering this service to you all wrapped up into one third wish. You're welcome. Where was I? Oh, right. So Kalani is going to do this homework that they were given by their therapist, where they each have to make a column of what their roles and responsibilities are in their marriage and their household and what they think their partner should be doing. So they exchange their lists, and Asuelu has Kalani doing the breastfeeding, dishes, cooking, cleaning, and proper garbage disposal, whatever the hell that means. And Asuelu has down that he should be doing his own dishes, the garbage, his own laundry, and raking up apples. Awesome. Obviously, Kalani is annoyed, and there was no way she was going to be able to explain the inequity in that situation. It was hard enough for her to even explain what this practice homework was to Asuelu. And I've said this before, and it's no fault of their own, but most men I know simply do not see the physical objects that we see around us. The actual things made of molecules that you would think they see, they don't. They have the privilege of selective blindness. And that goes for the moving humans around them that are picking things up. You know, we're straightening pillows, throwing away wrappers, picking up towels, taking apart and reassembling, oh my God, the freaking bottles and sippy cups and water bottles that have 13 fucking thousand pieces. And yeah, I'm being biased here. I'm generalizing that women do all of these things nonstop all fucking day, whether you have kids or not, because it's true in the scenarios that I know. You know, guys just don't see the things that are happening, not even behind the scenes, just in the scene, but without their name highlighted and flashing on it for them to pay attention to and do something about it. Now, unfortunately for Kalani and for many of us, men and women, there are rarely such things as a 50-50 relationship. You know, someone's always going to be doing more in one or more departments, and shifts and it changes, especially when you have kids and as your kids get older. And I think we would all love to see Asuelu just do the damn things that she's asking you to do. She's being very specific about it. You know, get off your ass. But for some reason, Asuelu, like many spouses, you know, you can just find something else that has to be done right away, like scooting some apples around in the backyard, and you can make yourself look busy, like you're actually being productive. But Asuelu is not going to do that. He's stubborn too. And at the end of the episode, that's where we got a real whopper of an update. 3 months after that chili nacho night, Asuelu, during peak COVID, when everyone's just starting quarantine, was out playing volleyball. He's kicking around different places, stores, restaurants. So not only was he putting his family at risk for contracting COVID, but he was lying about it. And it's not like he was lying about running an extra errand or, you know, he swung through an Arby's for a pre-dinner beef and cheese. He was spending hours away from his family, spending them selfishly to himself because, of course, when you have two kids at home screaming and crying, you want to be able to get out on your own. But Kalani can't do that. And he's being dangerous about it, too. And I think it's very easy as a viewer to be screaming at Kalani, like, just divorce him, because that's what I was thinking. But how easy it is for us to say that. They've got to have their own issues that we have no idea about that we haven't seen on the show. And of course, they have two little kids who love their dad, who are used to living with him, seeing him every day. But they have the world watching their marriage. You know, all of us loved Asuelu that first season and we were rooting for them and he was great. And I think many people who go through divorce consider it a failure. I don't think it's a failure. I think it's understandable that people would think that way, but it's only a failure to yourself if you continue to live in a miserable and unhappy existence. So I'm super curious to see how next week is going to play out. And if Asuelu shows up, I really hope he does, because that's just letting Kalani down one more time if he leaves her to handle it on her own, which seems to be a pattern in their marriage. All right, Elizabeth and Andre, Jesus, I'm so tired of watching this freaking family on TV and this Moldovan wedding. It has gone on for, what, at least 3 weeks, and it just keeps getting worse. I hate Chuck. I hate that he's all whiny, but he's also self-righteous. I can't believe Andre and Charlie are doing this at the wedding. But then he gets outside and he's a dick to Andre. He's such a bloated man, baby, smug. And then he has that blank stare too at the same time. I don't know how he does it. It's like a cowardly, bully, jowly look on his face. I hate him. I can't stand him. And then Jen, that shit-eating grin and her pot-stirring and the basic bitch highlights. Just keep it up, Jen. Keep it up. I can't wait for this freaking reunion. That entire family wants a Family Chantel spinoff so badly. And that delusion and greed that they have right now, somehow they've made Andre seem passable. I mean, he's a misogynistic prick. We all know that. But next to all of them, he looks damn near Prince Charming level. Ugh. Now, Sinjin and Tanya. Sinjin, please listen to your family for the love of God. Listen to them. You guys know his family had to have seen last season like we did. Watching Tanya week after week bark at him to finish the shed reno. He's sitting there smelling her dirty ass hair every week, her boobs laying all over the place. And now she travels across the world to go blow up their family vacation to destroy the bra. Sure, she ate their steaks and threw their son under the bus, but oh, fuck him. I mean, it's really depressing. Every time we've seen Sinjin in the past 3 weeks, it looks like we accidentally flipped the station to A&E and we're watching an episode of Intervention. No one wants him with her. And you know what? Maybe she destroyed his family's bra because she doesn't like wearing one herself. But why does everyone else have to get dragged into it and be miserable? And she's the one boo-hooing the most. Sinjin is the most miserable, but he's trying to make sure that she feels okay. I think she's turning this whole thing into a distraction. She's saying that Sinjin changed his mind, but it's not. I mean, how quickly she wants to move on from her being a complete selfish bitch last season and making it seem like he's the one refusing to change when it really just comes down to them being completely incompatible. Tanya met Sinjin when she was in a crazy adventurous stage, and now she's decided she wants to settle down and be a witch doctor, and he's supposed to go along with it. I think he does have a good heart, but he also is just wearing Tanya down to the point where she will be the one to pull the plug and be like, okay, you know what? You go back to South Africa. But for now, they're heading back to the United States, where he's probably going to pretend to interview for a few bartending gigs here and there, and Tanya's going to continue to work that foot injury for everything she can. And at the end of the day, she'll get some job. He won't, and he'll just be counting his nickels and dimes till he can fly back home and go on to have many a bra and many women who wear a bra. Speaking of women who wear bras, if you check out Patreon this week at patreon.com/lovetohateTV, Amanda and I will be doing a Teen Mom 2 recap crossover. If you are at the Muggin' Up level, remember we'll be talking about Pen 15, the Emmys, Paris documentary coming up in the next week or two, and so much more. Total Request Podcast is at patreon.com/trpod. This week, we are going to be talking about an episode of Who Wants to Be a Superhero that is at the listener request level. $4 a month gets you all of those, and you get to request whatever show you want us to watch. And at the $6 a month level, Amanda has assigned me an episode of Black Mirror. Check that out. Links are in the show notes. Thank you guys so much. And as always, and I mean this really sincerely every single week, take care of yourselves, take care of the people you love, wear a damn mask, and stay salty.